there's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.
Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home. Garland upstairs. Oh! Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Support for this podcast is brought to you by Fubo TV. Watch over 100 channels of live sports and TV for half the cost of cable. There's no contract and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com. Know what else there is? There's no Carter Rodriguez on today's podcast. He ran away from me once again. He's afraid of my takes. But you know what? It's no big deal because I could not be more excited to bring on somebody that I've been dying to have on this podcast for a while. From The Score, it's Esfandi Arberahini. S, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Good man, thank you. I guess you could say Carter's running away from the grind, you know, shout out Damian Lillard. But no, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much. It's actually a pleasure. Been looking forward to talking Cavs with you for a while now, so excited to do it.
I'm really excited to have you on as well because, I mean, you cover the NBA as a whole for The Score. You do a fantastic job. I think you're one of the most positive, like, hoops-loving people I know and one of my favorite guys to follow on Twitter. So really excited to have you on and excited to get your perspective on not only what I think could be a very promising rivalry between the Cavs and Raptors, and I want to reignite that rivalry, but also just, you know, the state of the Eastern Conference and where those two teams fit in. So I want to start things off by talking about where I kind of have the East in terms of tiers. Right now, I feel pretty confident saying that the top tier in the Eastern Conference is Boston, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and Miami. After that, I've got four teams in tier two. And no particular order, but kind of particular order. I got Toronto, Cleveland, Atlanta, and Chicago. I'm going to stop there. Do you have any objections, any teams that I excluded that you disagree with, or do you have any of those teams in different orders?
We actually have the exact same thing in almost the exact same order, shockingly. So sorry, continue.
Go ahead. I like it. Okay, that's a good sign. After that, you know, you got New York, Charlotte's obviously a tough situation. You don't know how that's going to go. I think they're actually going to take a bit of a step back, given the Miles Bridges situation. Washington and then Brooklyn is just such a weird situation. And then three promising teams. Like, I actually think I'm going to end up watching them a lot on League Pass, but Detroit, Indiana, and Orlando... they're still at the bottom, and some of that, like, if you look at the East 2 years ago, I feel like those teams would be more competitive in the East, but it really has been an arms race the last few years.
Yeah, to your point, it is really tough to gauge how much of a leap they might make. They've obviously added some interesting talent in a Jaden Ivey, in a Jalen Duren. You know, obviously, Cade Cunningham is who he is. And then on the other side for the Magic, adding Paolo Banchero, it's a whole different situation. But I think there's so much promise there that you could see that there's the potential they can get to that next level, that next tier, if you will, of the East. It's just a matter of when that happens. Maybe doesn't happen next season. You know, it would be pretty surprising to me if Orlando takes that step next year. I think Detroit is probably in a little bit better of a position to maybe make some noise in the East. But yeah, I mean, they're very, very exciting teams. And I think the Pacers are probably, if I had to like divide those three teams, I would probably put the Pacers last because I think they're a really? Little bit. The reason I say that is because I think they're a little bit behind on the rest of the roster. They have Tyrese Halliburton, obviously. Benedict Mathurin is another promising guy. But I think there's still some things around them that I would like them to add to kind of just make the team make more sense to me. I think the Pistons make more sense to me now. Orlando makes more sense to me. But Indiana in the make sense category is kind of trailing behind those two.
Yeah, and I guess it also depends on whether they decide to keep Miles Turner, Buddy Hield. Yeah. Like that obviously kind of changes things because Halliburton, he's older than a lot of these young players that we're talking about to begin with. So I kind of give him a bit of a nod. Sure. And then you do have the experience that guys like Turner and Buddy bring to the table. But, you know, it's probably going to come down to health, right? Like as much as we hate talking about it and whichever of those teams kind of makes a decision to either keep the roster intact or kind of is broken up by injuries and, you know, kind of playing the long game of we're not going to play guys hurt if we're not competing for the playoffs. That's probably going to determine how those teams shake out. But I'm glad you agree with my tiers at the top, because when I look at the second tier where I think both of our favorite teams lie, I look at Atlanta, I look at Toronto, and I look at Cleveland out of those three as the teams that have kind of the most promising young cores from that group. Chicago, they do have young players that I really like, and that's at this point, it's not unique around the league. I think every team, even if you're drafting later on, you get interesting players that are worth keeping a track on. But really, when it comes down to it, I think Atlanta and Toronto seem like teams that there's already, if not bad blood, there's a bit of a rivalry already starting. That was happening even when the Cavs were struggling last year or the previous year with the Atlanta Hawks. Those teams did not seem to like each other. They always played each other close. And then Toronto, we now have not only do we have kind of the history of those playoff series, which always helps when you're talking about building a rivalry, but you now have the added element of the Scotty Barnes versus Evan Mobley thing, which both fan bases feel very passionately about. There's a leaked report already that these teams are going to face off on opening night. We'll see tomorrow when the schedule is actually out. I love that. I hope that's the case. Where do you rank those teams, those three, in terms of kind of the young cores?
Yeah. I mean, you could kind of go either way because I think, and maybe we both agree on this, if we had to pick the best player of the bunch between those three, it'd be Trae Young. Young is the best player from those three. And I think that's a fair assessment to make. From there on, it's really a debate of, okay, would you prefer a Garland? Would you prefer a Pascal Siakam? Would you prefer, you know, anyone in that next tier?
Don't you dare start slipping Pascal Siakam into young core. That guy's turning 29 before next season.
Okay, touche.
You know what? Be careful.
Yeah. You know what's crazy, though? It's just because of the amount of time he's like been at this level. Yeah. It skips you that he's, you know, he's actually nearing the age of 30, or I think he might be 30, right? Like within the next year.
He's 28, and I think by playoffs he'll be 29. But, you know, he's a great example. And once again, I'm going to spew my propaganda, but someone that came into the league at 22 years old is still capable of getting better. And people should keep that in mind with Ochai Agbaji, because there's tons of examples around the league.
I have a question about him later. I'm very excited to ask you about Ochai. So, in general, I think tier-wise, you could go either way with those three. But I do think, in terms of you have that star player, Atlanta is probably ahead of both Toronto and Cleveland.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think Toronto and Cleveland have an advantage over Atlanta because they have more young talent that is probably just like in terms of rotation, right? Think about for the Cavs, you have Sexton, which is right now a question mark, Garland, right? And then on top of that, you have Okoro, Mobley, Jared Allen, who is still young. So there's a lot of young talent there. And then for the Raptors, there's Scottie Barnes, Precious Achiuwa, OG Anunoby, Gary Trent Jr., you know, these guys that they have as well. I think in terms of overall collective talent, the Raptors and Cavs probably have them outmatched. But in terms of the number one, you know, superstar type player that they have, Trae Young probably tops anybody of those three teams.
I think so, too. And really, like, I know everyone's going to come up with their own rankings of the Eastern Conference, but I don't think there's enough that separates Atlanta, Toronto, Cleveland, and Chicago. Like, I think it's going to come down to who dropped the fewest games that they should have won, who navigated injuries the best, right? Like all these kind of little things. And I think when it comes to a playoff series, I give all three of those teams an edge over the Cavs, just because there's more experience there, right? Like I think that was one of the kind of the missed opportunities with the Cavs missing the playoffs last year, that even if it was a 4 or 5 game series, learning to game plan for over the course of a 7 game series, planning for the same opponent, like that's experience that Toronto has, that Cavs don't. Obviously Trae Young has a conference finals run. Chicago's full of guys that have experience in those situations as well. And that stuff really ends up mattering. But the other side of that coin, of course, is the Cavs are so much younger than those other teams. And you got to add someone in Ochai Agbaji, who I think can really end up helping this team. But in the interest of reigniting the rivalry, which is what we're all here for today, I thought it would be kind of a fun exercise for both of us to ask our three kind of most burning questions about the other side. And I'll kick things off with the Toronto Raptors, which is, I mean, if we're talking about the relative young cores and this being a rivalry moving forward, we do have to address the elephant in the room at the start, which is that the Toronto Raptors have been rumored in some consolidation trades, whether it's Kevin Durant, Donovan Mitchell. Do you, as a fan and in your heart of hearts, do you want to see the Raptors accelerate the timeline in pursuit of that kind of consolidation trade if it does mean moving on from your young core? Because you do have these promising young players, but Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam are at the prime of their careers, 28, 29 years old. Where do you want to see this go?
Asking that question as a fan is a little bit different than being like, hey, dude from the score, answer that question for me. Because
I'm interested in the fan. Like,
I get it.
This is my space, right? Like, I get to stay a fan all the time. So I want to hear your heart of hearts, and you can mix some analysis in there if you want.
Yeah, yeah. I guess if I'm putting my analysis hat on real quick, I think money is going to get tight here for the Raptors very, very soon. There's just a bunch of guys who are coming up on extensions. Obviously, you have to consider in the back of your mind a Scottie Barnes extension coming at some point in time over the next, I think, 2-3 years left. Anyways, there's still that. Precious Achiuwa, obviously an extension coming up. Gary Trent Jr., who's going to opt out of his player option most likely in 2023, going to be a free agent. Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby. So there's a lot of money that is going to shrivel up really, really quickly for this team. And I think that's when you kind of consider, yes, a consolidation move makes a ton of sense because they have a lot of these players that they can package together for a Kevin Durant or a Donovan Mitchell or, you know, to Raptors fans, delight a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who is a guy who they have constantly tried to target. So, you know, these type of guys, I think, make a lot of sense for the ethos of the team. And if you believe in a Pascal Siakam, if you believe in a Fred VanVleet to be the supporting cast around one of these players, whether it be a Kevin Durant or a Donovan Mitchell or a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, whoever it might be, if you believe in those guys to be a supporting cast, which in all fairness, we've seen them do in 2019, they were a supporting cast to a magnificent player in Kawhi Leonard. If that is something that you believe in, and I think in my heart of hearts, I do believe that they can do that. I do believe that is a core that can be a championship contender given that, you know, option one type of guy, then yeah, you start considering, okay, you know, how can we package together an OG Anunoby, a Gary Trent Jr., maybe throwing in a Precious Achiuwa in there to see what you can get. I mostly agree with the sentiment that Scottie Barnes is untouchable. I think with the same thing with, you know, Evan Mobley, it's they're too young. They're too young to even consider them in deals, and they've just shown too much potential to the point where you'd want to even consider them in a trade for a guy who's 34 years old and a Kevin Durant. Yeah. If this was 29-year-old Kevin Durant, if this was 28-year-old Kevin Durant, this may be a different story and you consider it more heavily. But I don't think for that age difference, you can really consider moving a guy like Scottie or even Mobley, right? It's just, it just doesn't make sense to me. So I think, yes, consolidation is something that is coming within the next couple of years, but it's just about making that right move at the right time. And you know, we've seen it with Masai Ujiri. It is all about timing and figuring out the moment that makes sense for you to go all in.
Yeah, the Scottie KD thing is really interesting for me because the main difference between the Raptors situation and the Cavs is Garland's 22 and Allen's 24, right? Like, even if you have, like, even if you didn't even cost anything, if you add a star player to the mix, there's still that experience curve, right? There's that learning curve, whereas Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet have championship experience. So I understand how there is a kind of a healthy debate out there about the merits of that. And I mean, the last time Toronto traded a fan favorite with negative on-off splits for a star small forward, it worked out pretty well, you know? So,
This is reigniting the rivalry. It is. It is. I see it.
you see where I'm going with this. But yeah, for that reason, do you find like the prospect of doing something where Scotty's not involved, but, you know, paying a heavy price for someone like Donovan Mitchell, who is younger and has more years on the timeline, like, is that more appealing for you? Or
I think so.
I mean, the Shea thing is interesting too. I feel like Raptors fans do with Shea what we did with like Brandon Ingram. Now we've kind of given up hope that that's ever possible. But it's just like the fit and the storyline, all that is just so fun there. I understand why. You'd go nuts for that.
I mean, every time he suits up for Team Canada, it's just like a whole moment, you know? Everybody is kind of in that energy, and they see him in the red and white, and they're like, oh, it's meant to be, right? So I think it does make you more cognizant of the fact that, you know, something has to get done here if they believe in this core. And I think I keep stressing if they believe in this core because of the fact that over the past couple of years, we haven't really seen Raptor, like the front office in general, do any drastic moves that dictate that they really, really do believe this is a championship core. Mm. With that being said, adding a guy like Kevin Durant changes that. Adding a guy like Donovan Mitchell even changes that. And I think they understand that, you know, the ethos, I guess the tandem of Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet can be a supporting cast, but does it make sense to make that move? And does it make sense for what player is always the question. I think, you know, at that point, like, you're kind of...
That's the tricky
it's
thing.
It's a risk, right?
Like,
yeah.
I think Toronto and Cleveland are in the same situation where it's kind of seems like there will be a consolidation move at some point over the next couple of years, but you have no control over what players are going to be available at that time, right? And you have to make these very difficult decisions over... Where? How far along are we? Are we this player away? Is this worth giving up the now standard every pick you owe in the future kind of thing? Like, those are really, really tough decisions that if you make that decision for the wrong player, it can really do a lot of damage for your team. So that's very, very difficult. And I'm not envious of you guys because I feel like the Cavs have a little bit more time to figure that stuff out.
Age, right? Age is such a massive factor of this because you like, and the contract situation is such a fun wrinkle because these guys are going to look for max extensions coming up too. So you have to essentially commit to say, hey, this is the core we want to build around over the next couple of years. Or you have to decide, hey, let's retool. Let's build around Scotty and OG and those guys and go young again. But yeah, there's going to be some really, really important decisions coming up for these guys.
Absolutely. All right. Let's have it. What's your first question here?
Well, I guess my question is a little bit different. Okay. So I've seen a lot of stuff about Mobley, and just in general, his growth, his development, what people expect of him, especially when it comes to self-creation. I have my own opinions on this. And, you know, as a guy who like, Cavs were like my second team last year. I followed them so religiously. What are your feelings or your just idea in terms of the projection specifically when it comes to Mobley self-creation?
Yeah, I think when it comes to next year, I'm not expecting like a massive statistical leap, but I am expecting more experimentation. And that may come with growing pains, but even I don't expect his self-creation to come from like, okay, it's a set defense, we give it to Mobley and go cook. Like, I think it's going to come off of movement where you get the ball to him after, like, an off-ball action, whether it's, like, leveraging the gravity of Garland off-ball or Agbaji or any of those guys. Like, they've got a lot of guys that can be active. And getting the ball to him and getting him to attack a destabilized defense and acting in dribble handoffs and all that sort of thing. Like, that's where I see kind of the self-creation and almost maybe like mimicking some of like Minnesota Kevin Love, where it's like high post actions where he's initiating the offense from that kind of standpoint. I think that's the kind of things that I'd really like to see, or a pop off of a double drag, right? Like we saw some videos of him working on the three-pointer in that scenario. Like that's the kind of stuff that I'd really like like to see versus the creation against a set defense. I think that is the best way to kind of implement some wrinkles into what the Cavs are already doing that don't disrupt what made that group so special in year one.
Yeah, and I'll just to, I guess, add to this, I think as the season went on, you saw him work on his face-up game so much more. And when it comes to like breaking, not necessarily breaking a down guy off the dribble, but like footwork, figuring out angle, and just attacking a guy on his weak foot, whatever you want to call it, like all of these little things, you saw different wrinkles being added as the season went on. I really don't understand. There's something on Twitter going on with like, oh, Mobley's offensive creation is cooked. He like, no, there's not really a potential there, et cetera, et cetera. And I completely disagree. I don't see it at all. I actually think there is potential there, not necessarily to be like a self-sufficient Nikola Jokic type of creator, but in a sense where he can create his own shot. He can create for others a little bit too. He's obviously shown some playmaking chops last year. And, you know, be this, you know, self-sufficient type of scorer. I really do think that's possible for him. I don't understand why there's a conversation against that. So that's, I guess that's the thing I wanted to ask you is why, where's this conversation coming from, really?
Well, I think that's all tied into the rivalry, right? Like, especially when you had down the stretch, not only was the rookie of the year debate so close, you had Cavs and Raptors so close in the standings. And as the Cavs kind of fell apart, you had people picking holes. And even people citing the defense without Jared Allen, where you saw the defensive drop off with Allen and no Mobley was the exact same as Mobley with no Allen, right? Like, it really worked well as a tandem. So I think you're always going to have people poking holes. And the fact that both Mobley and Scottie Barnes were so, like, such a significant part of two teams that were already playing winning basketball, like, that's a real feather in their cap. So you're going to have people picking nits, and you're going to have people kind of accentuate the aspects that one does and not the other. And I think you even saw that with Cade Cunningham, whereas I think if Cade Cunningham was added to the Raptors or the Cavs, he probably would have had an even better season, because you look at those three players in particular, they're all so high IQ that the more talent you put around them, the better they're going to look. So I agree with you. Like, I think Mobley actually showed more self-creation than I even expected in his rookie year. Like, he's got that Kevin Garnett, like, turnaround jumper, right? That's so hard to block. Yeah. And just the way that he leverages his length and his impressive balance, like, he almost never falls down, but he's kind of knifing around guys and using his length to his advantage. Like, that kind of stuff, as he adds more strength and as he tightens up his handle, improves his jump, that's all going to be there. He's not going to need to dance like Darius Garland in order to get his buckets.
Yeah, I think that's actually such a good point for Mobley and Scotty, because they were both touted as guys who were defensive minded coming into the draft, and, you know, especially going into year one. And Mobley showed off a lot of defensive chops. I think Scotty definitely has to improve in that category. But the funny thing is, I think offensively, they both showed a lot of promise as well. Promise that we didn't probably expect in year one.
So, people calling Scotty a zero-level scorer. Yeah. And we were high on Scotty on the podcast, too, going into the draft process. But once the Cavs were at three and we were like, okay, we're getting Jalen Green. And then all of a sudden the reports came out that Houston was locked in on him. I'm like, okay, we're actually getting Evan Mobley? We're getting Mobley? Okay. That's pretty exciting.
There was a tiny bit of, like, there was maybe a 0.5 of a second where we thought you guys would go ahead and, you know, go off the board and maybe take someone else, and we'd end up, you know, the Raptors would end up with Mobley. So it was just like, fingers crossed. We were hoping for him to drop too, because he obviously fills such a important need for the Raptors as a, you know, interior big. But yeah.
Absolutely. Well, my next question is, outside of Scottie Barnes, who is the young player that you're kind of banking on to show the most meaningful internal growth this season and like really kind of step up their contributions to the Raptors?
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned him a little bit earlier, but it's definitely Precious Achiuwa. I think the reaction Raptors fans had from him in game one, when he just looked lost on the court, you know, positionally, he just didn't know what he was doing, to game 82, when he had become like a self-sufficient, he was pulling up from three. I believe after January 1st, he shot almost 40% from three. You know, the stroke looked much better. He was much more in control. I kind of liken him to like the Tasmanian devil, where he's just spinning around everywhere and trying to do things, but he really didn't know how to channel that energy. And throughout the course of the season, he did. He figured it out, and he just became a really, really strong defender, a positional defender, switches. You know, we say 1-5. 1-5 is pretty ridiculous to think of, but he can definitely switch 3-5 and guard a lot of wings, guard a lot of bigs, and even, you know, give his hand at trying to guard a Joel Embiid, guard a Nikola Jokic, the bigger guys that you could expect. That's one guy that I think if he can become more consistent, now you have a second promising guy, a young guy specifically, that you can look forward to. And I think a lot of, you know, Raptors fans, Raptor media really expect that to happen. Even Nick Nurse himself, he went on a podcast, I believe, a couple of months ago and mentioned that Precious has kind of figured it out now. You know, over that last year, he was really trying to figure out who he can be as a player. And now that he knows, he understands what role he can play in this league, he's kind of doubling down on those things and focusing more on the little things that he can do and improve on to get to that next level. I think Precious is a guy who defensively, we say all defense, but he really does have potential to be an all defense type guy. And then if the offense can just be a little harnessed more and less chaotic, it's the sky's the limit for the dude, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the post All-Star stretch, like, he was a major part, and it didn't get talked about because he wasn't kind of one of the feature guys, but yep. His play after the All-Star break, where he's shooting 4 threes a game at 39%, his true shooting percentage went up by basically 10%. It was still below league average, but, you know, like, he was out there with a different kind of gravity and different level of confidence. So I think looking at those post All-Star splits, sometimes it doesn't tell you the full story, but there's other times where it really does kind of indicate, hey, there's something here. This player figured it out. We saw that with Darius Garland, where his first 2 years, even, like, he got a lot better after the All-Star break and kind of got a little bit confidence. And the leap we saw last year was telegraphed in April the year prior. So I could definitely see that with Precious. And to me, it's interesting because that's kind of the one spot on the roster. And I know they used the second round pick on a center, but that's kind of the one spot that's a little bit of a question mark, especially when you look at kind of the NBA adding so much size and more teams going to bigger looks.
I mean, the Cavaliers are a massive example of this, right? These double big lineups are becoming more and more consistent with Allen and Mobley, and, you know, in Minnesota you have Gobert and Kat. So teams are going big a lot more now, and they're comfortable going big and staying big. So I think that's definitely something the Raptors are considering. And obviously with their all 6'9" lineup, it's going to be, you know, an interesting wrinkle to add in there. I just wanted to say one thing when it comes to Precious specifically, and just Garland and, like, All-Star break leaps. I remember a year before the Cavs made their leap, I made a video on The Score saying, look, watch out for Sexland. I was actually, funny enough, I was really, really close. I was close to wearing your shirt, the Sexland shirt, on the video, but it didn't happen. Didn't work out. Anyways, so, you know, I really do think that All-Star break leap is such a good indicator for guys taking leaps in that next season, because it shows a wherewithal, an understanding, maybe something figuring, you know, you're figuring out something clicked, right?
Yeah.
And in that next season, if you can carry that momentum forward, it's really indicative of something. So yeah, I think Precious is definitely on that list of guys where it's like, hey, watch out for him. He may take a leap.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I remember that was one of the things that was most encouraging for me, was the fact that while Garland was putting up like that 21-7, Sexton was playing so well, right? Like, they weren't sapping off of one another and one's holding the other one back. It showed me that even with someone getting a lot of shots, that Garland can still get his numbers off. And that's what really makes his game so scalable and attractive, and really kind of opens up the possibilities for the types of players they can add moving forward.
Glad you asked that question or brought up Sexton, because it is related. This is related. Obviously, you know, the restricted free agency talk with Colin Sexton and him kind of being squeezed a little bit here when it comes to his extension and whatnot, whatever you want to call it, right? Whatever's happening right now is behind the scenes, and they're trying to figure out what, you know, what number really works the best for both sides. But I do think a question to be had here is, do you think long-term the Sexton-Garland duo backcourt, whatever you want to call it, is a viable way moving forward, especially now that you know, Mobley is on the back line, Allen is on the back line, you have Okoro, who is a good defender, Ochai, right? Do you believe in that as your backcourt for the next 4 or 5 years?
I think it can work. I think you can absolutely have a guard rotation where both of those guys are working. Now, there's a very real possibility that it has a ceiling and that, you know, you get to the playoffs and it gets attacked in ways that make it hard to work. But we've also seen shorter backcourts work defensively. Mm-hmm. Like I think Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet's a great example. Both of those guys are 5'11", and they made it work because there was Marc Gasol and Siakam and Ibaka, yeah, and Kawhi Leonard, right? And OG for a lot of that season. So I think you can make it work, and they've already put quite a bit of infrastructure in place with Mobley and Allen. Like, that covers up for so much. But it is tricky. Like I definitely see the potential for it not working long term, but I do think right now the best way forward is to run back what you have and really see, okay, what lineups work best. Can these guys play well off of one another? Like, that's where I think they are on the developmental curve, is still kind of in the wait and see mode. Like, I think when you look at the Portland example of Dame and CJ,
that's the common example people bring up with these two, right? Yeah.
Right. Like, I think when you look at the example, the mistake Portland made wasn't, you know, keeping them together and giving CJ a second contract or and all that kind of stuff. It was when the opportunities came up for a consolidation trade, they didn't make that move. Like, Toronto ran into that with Lowry and DeRozan. Like, the mistake wasn't having those two together. It's, okay, once you kind of bump into a ceiling in the playoffs, you have to recognize that and make the move. Could Portland have gone out there and added Kawhi Leonard when he was available, right? Like, would CJ have been part of that package? Because I don't think San Antonio got necessarily like a fantastic return for Kawhi Leonard, right? Like, you feel like they could have been competitive. So it's one of those tricky things, right? Of, you can see a potential ceiling in the future, but you don't want to move too soon and kind of like anticipate that ceiling and sell low on a tandem before you really get a sense of whether or not it can work. So for me, I really do think they can work. I think you need to get a little bit creative with the rest of the stuff around the lineup. Obviously, you'd want to stagger those two. But I do think historically, having a player like Sexton that has played well off ball and has adjusted to that role, especially if he can kind of up that three-point volume, I think that that's something that can work. The biggest question is going to be whether or not he recognizes his defensive potential. And I think he showed signs of that last season. But when you're talking about such a small sample size, there's reason for doubt, especially when you throw in the complexity of an injury situation as well.
Yeah. I mean, one of the famous pictures of Sexton is him, you know, smacking the floor with him on defense, guarding the guy, right? So, like, that defensive intensity is there. There is, you know, they say he's got that dog in him, right? Yeah. He really does have that dog in him. So, like, I think in a lot of ways, Sexton adds so much versatility to the team. And with Mobley at the back line, Allen at the back line, you have a couple of other wing defenders that you can maybe mold into being these 3-and-D guys. I think that's the perfect type of team to have a small backcourt with, because like you said, with Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry, you have these guys that can be a supporting cast around them. That's the issue that Portland had too. They never really had the Mobley, the Allen, a bunch of 3-and-D guys.
Utah had the same thing, right? Like, they just had Rudy Gobert and then like 6'5" Royce O'Neal or Bogdanovich or Ingles, right? Like, there wasn't the rest of that kind of front court support there.
Yeah. And like, offensively, I think when Sexton went out last year, you guys lost so much of your offensive versatility. It seemed like a lot of it was just Garland pick and roll, Rubio pick and roll, and see if we can generate stuff from there. But Sexton just adds so much, just another dynamic, just another source, something to, you know, kind of go through. And I think LeVert to a certain extent does that as well. I totally agree. I think Sexton is like a must to keep there, which is in a lot of ways why I'm kind of bullish on Sexton now, even though, you know, it seems the Cavs and him are a little bit far apart on their extension. I think he does make sense for their future.
Yeah, absolutely. And the support of Evan Mobley and Jared Allen definitely makes a big difference from a team building standpoint, just like the support that Zoom provides to this podcast. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. All right, my third question for you, man.
Let's hear it.
So we kind of already touched on the one that I had, which was, if the path to contention doesn't involve a big trade, what do you kind of make of the timeline? Like, what's the path to these teams, this team getting better? But because we already touched on that, I've got a bit of a backup here.
Okay.
Do you think the Siakam, OG, Scotty Barnes, those three in the front court is something that can work moving forward long term? Because there certainly were the rumors that, like, OG wasn't necessarily happy about his touches. And, you know, like, mm-hmm. even if you're talking about like a Precious breakout, all of a sudden you have Scotty Siakam, OG to kind of figure out who starts and who goes to the bench. Like, do you think that trio can work long term for the Raptors?
Yeah, it's really interesting too, because they are pushing so much of this positionless basketball, you know, 6'9", throw whatever guy you want on the lineup. So it's tough to really
define. You guys are hogging all the 6'9" wings like that. Yeah, you know, we'll take OG if you want.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like, if we were to combine the Raptors and Cavs, unstoppable contender it's the for Monstars. Years to come. Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. But no, I mean, I think the functionality of a couple of these guys makes it so that you can play them at different positions. You know, we've heard Nick Nurse talk about the fact that they want Scotty to be more of a point guard moving forward. So I think you could see him end up being more of a ball handler and less of a forward, even though he does fit the mold of being a forward. So now you're afforded to kind of throw him in the backcourt and have him and Fred VanVleet as your backcourt. And now you have room for a Precious or whoever, a big man, whatever comes by. But I think that's the way you do this, is you make other guys be put into different positions that they can be in. Pascal Siakam, another guy who has developed into a playmaker, maybe he plays more of a point forward role. And you have, you know, a bunch of guys who can do a little bit of everything. The goal with that is that you don't have to necessarily worry about the positions, more so about touches. And I 100% agree that the OG thing is something that they need to address. I think it's been confirmed to me by a bunch of different people that, you know, the OG thing does have merit to it. There is truth to this. And when it comes to figuring it out, this is probably, you know, problem number one that they want to figure out, because OG is a really good player. Mm-hmm. He's very, very talented. He wants to see more self-creation opportunities, more touches, more opportunities for him to grow as a player. And
do you think that's like something that's worth investing in, like getting those self-creation, or do you think he's a little better off? Like, Mikal Bridges is an interesting example, not only because both of them are kind of in trade rumors when you talk about Kevin Durant and that, but like, both of them filled their role so well, but there's also like the flashes of self-creation with both, where you feel like, okay, I can see OG or Bridges expanding their game, but is that what's in the best interest for the team? Do you think expanding that aspect for OG and prioritizing his development is what's best for the Raptors?
I think it's not what's option number one. I think they would love to do that, but I think for them is, you know, hey, how can we get Scotty more touches right now? How can we figure out what he can be, what his potential is? Hey, how can we get Precious more involved and get him, you know, more touches, etc.? But I do think OG is someone that they want to kind of keep moving forward. It's just a matter of, how are we going to keep this guy satisfied? How are we going to keep him happy with all of these mouths to feed? Yeah. The Raptors are in sort of a peculiar situation, if you will, because they were the only team last year that had all five of their starters average 15 plus points. And I think most of them had 20 plus usage. So all of the guys are handling the rock. Everybody is touching the ball.
They're all playing 40 minutes.
They're all playing 40 plus minutes. Yeah, exactly. And it's tough to see how you can shift over stuff without taking away from guys who are already contributing at a high level. You know, you'd have to take away from a Fred VanVleet who probably exerted himself too much last season. You'd probably have to take away from a Pascal Siakam a little bit in order to give more opportunities to Scotty and OG. I personally think that it's worth it to do that, because Fred VanVleet is such a good off-ball player, so you can take away some of his on-ball reps and give it to a Scotty and give it to an OG. And he's mentioned in the past that he's comfortable with that happening down the road. I think there is room for that. I really do think there is room for that. And in terms of it being worth it, I think OG has shown enough to show and to say to the Raptors that, hey, like, look, I can do a little bit more. Let me see what I can do. And if that opportunity presents itself, why not take it?
Yeah, for sure. I just think it gets so tricky when you talk about who starts, because it's weird, because they have a logjam with kind of those 6'9" wings, but then there's also like, there's not a ton of depth at the 1 and 2, right? Like there's not a lot of proven depth, I should say. You can always kind of have internal leaps, whether it's from guys like Banton or some of the other guys that they have in that mix. But
what's funny is, I'll say this, is like they you could say they have a logjam, and I could sit here and agree with you, but they don't. Like, they really don't believe that they have a logjam. They think, like, the more the merrier. Let's get more 6'9" guys and see how we can make these funky lineups. And Nick Nurse has proven in the past that, like, he enjoys making these weird lineups and seeing if they work. So, I don't know. I think it's a good problem to have, but it's definitely something that they want to address.
Yeah, for sure. That makes a lot of sense. All right. What's your third and final question here?
I am dedicating a whole question to Ochai. So talk to me, man. Look, how big of a role do you expect him to have this year? You obviously mentioned the fact that he's a little bit older. He's 22. So he might be more ready to contribute. He was awesome in the summer league. I thought he was great. Do you expect him to have a big role this season, especially because you guys have a pretty, speaking of log jams, a log jam at the guard rotation, even if Sexton comes back. So what do you think?
Yeah, I kind of like have him penciled in right now for like 18 minutes a night. Like, I think he's going to eat a lot of like the backup small forward minutes, and maybe he ends up getting labeled as the shooting guard in that lineup and call like Caris LeVert the small forward or whatever the case may be. But I kind of see him filling that role, because like, I don't know. I basically kind of see him taking the Jetty Osman role. Like, at least that's my hope, right? Like, when you invest a first round pick, you want to see them have that kind of an impact. And I just think the gravity, like, you look at Lauri Markkanen, and it took him a while to find his footing playing at the small forward position last year. But even early on, when the three pointer wasn't falling at the same clip it was second half of the season, he still had a lot of gravity and he helped those lineups work. And I think having someone that doesn't really take a lot off the table, that knows his role, that is going to have those quick trigger threes. He's so talented and athletic off ball. Like, I think that's someone that Darius Garland's going to find for backdoor lobs and all that kind of stuff. Like, that skill set is something I see earning minutes. And I see that's someone that I can see JB Bickerstaff having a lot of trust in, assuming it all works, right? Like, Carter's brought this up a million times, but even like JJ Redick, it was a learning curve for him to get those shots off in the NBA and shoot at a high level. Danny Green obviously took some time. Joe Harris took some time. Like, all of these guys take time. Even Desmond Bain, I think Bain's a good example of like a four-year player like Abaji, was good his rookie year, but wasn't, you know, like a 25 minute per night kind of guy that you could rely on in the same way. So I do think Abaji is going to have a significant role. The X factor in that, of course, is, does Isaac Okoro take a big step forward, because he's basically the same age as Mobley. Like, we've already now had reports that he's made significant strides offensively this offseason, and the Cavs are happy with the progress he's made. I want to see it. And I think it's a good thing that you have the healthy competition, and there's all these kind of like 6'6" guards that can maybe flex over to the three, and Abaji is one of them. So I do think that there's going to be a pretty meaningful opportunity and role available for Abaji.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that, because I'm high on him. I really do think like there is potential for him to come in, contribute right away. And like you said, maybe not in a 25 plus minute a role night, but like 18, 20 minutes, maybe 15 a night. That's definitely something that you can see him do. And I think it's a good problem to have all these guards that you can kind of facilitate and work with, because down low, you're established, in my opinion. Mobley, obviously Rolo off the bench is actually a really good add too. I think that kind of solidifies some things for you guys. But in terms of your guard rotation, now you have these different things that you can play with, these different lineups, and guys who can kind of give you different things. Garland is the main centerpiece there, of course. But, you know, when it comes to Sexton and his off-ball movement, his creativity when it comes to creating for himself, then you have Okoro and Abaji who can do a little bit of everything here and there. And Okoro is, I would say, he's probably the best cutter on the team if you want to.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty reasonable take. I mean, Jared Allen will be cheating with Instagram running. But yeah, at least for perimeter guys, I would say Okoro's definitely up there. It's either him or Sexton, right?
Yeah. So I just think there's so many guys that can do so many different things for you guys. And, you know, one of the things, like I mentioned earlier, is like this offensive versatility was probably the one thing I would have liked the Cavs to address. And I think with their additions this summer, they have bringing back Rubio, Obagi, et cetera, et cetera. These are guys that can give you a little bit more juice.
Even Neto, right? Like Neto can let you run some off-ball sets for Garland in a two-point guard look. Like I think people forget just kind of how weird the Cavs got early in the season. Like there were like at least two games. I know the Clippers was one of them, and I think Charlotte was the other, where they closed with Garland, Rubio, Sexton, Mobley, and Allen. Like it was a three-point guard look or a three-guard look. And like it was just okay, let's get funky, let's try stuff. This way we've got all these different guys moving off ball. And it really was unfortunate that as the season progressed, more and more tools were taken out of the tool belt instead of adding to it, right? So I am interested to see what a full season of Caris LeVert coming into camp looks like, what Lauri Markkanen preparing to play three in the offseason looks like, right? Like there's just so many different things that could end up hitting that it really does feel like there's a lot of great options for the Cavs.
And health. There's no other team other than maybe Zion Williamson and the Pelicans that I just hope stays healthy this year, because there was something really special happening early in the season. So I hope stay healthy.
Man games
please.
Missed. I mean, the only team in the Eastern Conference that missed more games than the Cavs was Orlando, who missed like an impossible, like 450 man games or something like that. 268 player games missed for the Cavs due to injury, not counting COVID. And, you know, the healthiest teams were like Charlotte, Boston, Philly, and Toronto was the fourth. So, you know, I think the health is definitely going to play a factor. But I also think, like, teams aren't going to be caught off guard by the Cavs in the same way, right? Like, it's going to be a real dogfight. And before we wrap this thing up, I'm curious. Out of kind of like that third tier of the Knicks, Charlotte, Washington, like, which of those teams do you think has the best chance of jumping up into this next tier?
That tier. Are we counting the Detroit and Orlando?
You know, if you want to go all the way down and predict like a Cavs like rise, mm-hmm, go for it.
I really do think it's the Pistons, man.
Really?
I really, maybe not this year. It might be a year too early. That happened to me with the Cavs, too.
I think that's the case. I think they're just a little bit too young, especially like if Durant's playing a major role. Like quarterbacking a defense as a center is
tough.
So tough. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you're right. And I remember, what was it, 2 years ago, I said the same thing about the Cavs, and I was a year early, and, you know, it happened after that. So I don't know. I see something with the Pistons, maybe not this year, but I do think that at some point they'll jump. Now, if we're talking about this year, I think probably the Knicks are the team that I would pick in that group. I think you said it. Charlotte regressing makes a bunch of sense. Obviously, them with the Miles Bridges situation is a whole thing. And Washington, I just think, is just stuck in this mediocrity mud that they just can't get out of. And I really don't see a leap unless Bradley Beal is back to all NBA type levels,
and if Johnny Davis is who I thought pre-draft and not what he looked like in summer because that looked like really bad really fast.
Exactly. And look, I mean, maybe Kristaps Porzingis gets back to his ways, who knows, but I think they had him.
My goodness.
Yeah
What a weird team.
It's a strange team, right? I can't put my vote for those guys. So I guess I would say the Knicks, just because I think Brunson is good. I think Brunson is a really, really good, like, they've needed a point guard for so long, and he fills that need. And, you know, opens up a lot of things for RJ and maybe even Julius Randle to do a little bit, you know, things that he's better at versus trying to be this point forward type. So I would say the Knicks, but I'm not necessarily like throwing my, you know, betting the house on it. But
I mean, from a reported Christmas Day schedule standpoint, I'm sure everyone at the league office would hope that it's the Knicks making a step forward, because that makes that first game a lot more interesting. But I also kind of like being eased in to my Christmas Day, you know,
a game
you don't really have to care about. You're still kind of like working on meal prep for later in the day or whatever you got going on Christmas Day. It's kind of nice to have the reliable Knicks just being a little bit mediocre mediocre at that. The like, buffer game? Yeah. I need a buffer sometimes before, like, to ease in and prepare my mind. It's like stretching before a big athletic competition. The Knicks are the stretching of the NBA.
The stretch of the NBA. Yes. Thank you, New York, for that. I appreciate you. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, Les, thank you so much for coming on, man. This was a lot of fun. Before I wrap this thing up, do you have anything you got going on you want to let people know about?
Yeah, got a video coming out on Thursday about Bronny James. That should be a fun one. And then on Saturday, a video on Bill Russell's legacy. So check it out on the Scores YouTube channel if you'd like.
Absolutely. Make sure you guys are subscribing to that. It's a lot of fun. Big thanks to everyone for supporting the podcast. We obviously weren't live on YouTube this time because Carter is overseas. He ran away from us. He couldn't even stand to be in the same country. Not that we're ever in the same country, but, you know, same continent. He didn't want to be in the same continent, but we really do appreciate all your support. Make sure, if you want to support us via podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Down's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cats.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.